Hello and welcome to Spotlight, the Star Trek podcast from a non-Trekkie perspective. I'm Liam Dempsey and I'm joined by my usual co-hosts, Matt.
Hello, friends.
And Paul.
Howdy, Spotlighters.
And we are back to discuss Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4. You never thought you'd hear the day when I would be talking about Star Trek Lower Decks Season 4.
Especially as the tease for like Series 4 at the end of Series 3 was the return of the most loathed character, Badgy. So, and, you know, you've been peanut hampered to death at this point. Yeah.
Christ.
At the edge of the universe.
Starfleet intercepted a distress call command thinks could be related to the recent attacks.
At the brink of destruction.
The attacks have all been non-Federation ships, but now someone's targeting Starfleet.
They're sending the Cerritos? I guess we're finally getting some respect.
Oh, man, I have to start with holodeck waste removal. Blech.
Your odor will be repulsive.
These are the voyages of the crew of the starship Cerritos.
We're all such a good team. We finish each other's...
Diophantine equations.
Don't get too used to this kind of work. Promotions are coming up, and I think you'll be very happy.
Wait, really?
As long as nothing goes sideways today.
So, loyal listeners will know that I have been on quite the journey with Lower Decks.
Quite the character.
Season 1, which, lest I remind you, listeners, Matt low-key loved.
I did. I don't know what I last said about it, but yeah, sure.
So, basically, I was not a fan of Season 1. I did not enjoy it. And by the end of our Season 1 episode, I was basically saying, I might be out. Now, Matt and Paul managed to convince me to give Season 2 a go, and I did. And Season 2 was an improvement. So much of an improvement that I was like, oh, you know what? Maybe this is going to be okay. I genuinely enjoyed Season 2. Still had its flaws. But, you know, I genuinely was like, oh, this is a major step up. Maybe it was just finding its feet.
Then Typical Star Trek, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Then we did Season 3. And I found myself back in a middling, weird buffer zone, almost trapped in the pattern buffer like Mbenga's daughter in Strategy Worlds. And I was just like, look, this is okay, but there's still a lot I don't like, and I'm three fucking seasons in. If I wasn't doing a podcast about Star Trek, there is no way I would have ever got this far. And the seventh episode, which was the Peanut Hamper So episode, was one of the worst things I've ever seen in my life. And so by the end, I was just kind of like, oh God, I was back at that point where I was like, I might be done. But then we found out there was going to be a crossover episode.
Just when you thought you were, they tracked to beam you back in.
With Strange New Worlds. And I really liked Strange New Worlds. So I was like, okay, I'm going to have to watch the crossover episode. And at that point, I was like, if they come in to Strange New Worlds and ruin Strange New Worlds with their episode, then I'm going to be
with their hijinks.
But we all know, if you listen to our Strange Worlds Season 2 review episode, that we all really, really, really loved the Lower Decks crossover episode. It was great. And it actually gave me warmer feelings towards Lower Decks than I had before, because Jack Quaid's so amazing as Boimler in that episode. And I was like, oh, maybe I do like this character. Maybe I do like this world and show. And so I went in
to Season 4. Had you been thinking
your entire life. Yeah, pretty much. I went into Season 4 with open eyes and... Guys, I'm won over. I will not be the Lower Decks curmudgeon today. I genuinely think this is the best season of the show. I think it's a really strong season. There's only one episode that I didn't like, and I'm sure you can all fucking guess which one it is. We'll get into that later. But even that episode, I didn't think was eye-scratchingly awful. First initial thoughts is I really liked this season. So there you go. That's the big surprise for this episode. Matt, what are your first initial thoughts here?
I'm still on board as well. I'm very much the same as you in that Strange New Worlds episode did do a lot to kind of endear me to these characters even more. I think seeing Boimler and Mariner in live action, being able to be played by their proper actors from the show, did so much. But I think the way they were used and integrated into Strange New Worlds made so much sense for that show. And then seeing that tonal balance of what Lower Decks does and what Strange New Worlds does work so well was also quite a shock. And so coming into this, it felt like I had more of a connection to them there. And then as it goes on, it's like one of those things where I think Sam was saying in that, how just getting to spend more time and know the crew is often such a key with any Star Trek show, it seems. It's why we've all kind of struggled with a lot of Discovery and why some of the other shows work a lot better. And Lower Decks has always been getting there. And I think knowing you've got another 10 new episodes of like short, sharp, 25-minute adventures that are mostly standalone with a small series thread throughout means it is very much a joy to watch. And I think there's some great standouts here. And long may it continue, I think.
Yeah, yeah, up to this point, I didn't really care about the characters. But like, I think it's it did make me care slightly more this time around. I liked the introduction of Tilin to kind of the ensemble.
Yeah.
I think they were good foil. Comedic foil throughout, and I thought the deepening of Mariner's character, particularly her arc in this, were very interesting. A bit more yummy on the bones. Also, you know, we've got Tendi and anything kind of Orion related, as you know, I'm really into.
Yes.
Like so is my wife. So it was like, yeah, we're really pleased. There's a lot of, like, Orion action.
Mm-hmm.
Sad to see no Paul Boimler this time around. Like, I like that, like that thread in season three where he was like just being really
Paul Boimler.
It was like just hilarious when he would fuck up. So I was ashamed that he was just sort of doing more regular Boimler hijinks. But yeah, there's a good mix of episodes. There was some I really, really enjoyed, and others I kind of dozing out of, like, to be fair. Yeah, but yeah, we'll talk through, I think, episode by episode, and just kind of give it a little kind of like a pressy, I think, just to sort of like bring out the good bits, which really like to.
Yeah, we'll go over it. I mean, because Lower Decks is reasonably episodic, but we will kind of go on an overview basis, because of course this season I would say that there was a bigger arc element than there had ever been before. There have been like running threads and stuff like that in previous seasons, and things that do kind of come back or build over episodes. But this season literally had a proper arc from scene one to the last scene, where obviously there's seemingly at the beginning, there's almost every single pre-titles is a little short film set on another ship of a different species, with them being seemingly attacked and seemingly destroyed. We go like from like the Ferengi to the Klingons to other species and stuff like that. And they're all seemingly getting attacked and destroyed, and that builds up over time. Hey, we learn
the Bynars, like, I'm seeing them back.
Season one
of Next Gen.
We learn
that episode you've got to watch, Matt.
Okay, yeah. Are they the pink alien things?
Sort of. It's a very long binary number. Is that the title episode? But it's one of the real highlights of season one.
Okay,
that's another episode of TNG homework that you've got to do off the back of this season.
Oh, no, but it's already committed to all three seasons of the old original series, right?
Yeah.
On top of that. So, like, but your kind of papers are stacking up.
Yeah, well, this is after I should mention that we appeared on the Trexperts quiz, a kind of pod vidcast that we were on, and, well, Matt and I humiliated ourselves on by not knowing that much about the original series. But Paul did very well and was spoiler victorious. So you can hear that now on their kind of, you know, podcast feed and such like that. We'll probably put a link in the show notes or something like that.
Yeah, it's to my utmost family's shame that even the ones that when I buzzed I knew just went out of my head the second I buzzed. And I was like, fucking Gary Mitchell, my boy. And Joan Collins was not Diana Rigg, obviously.
Gary Mitchell, the lost Mitchell brother.
Yeah.
That would have got you to a total of 2 points.
I will plead my case and blame my tools and say towards the back end, I think my Zoom...
Your brain.
I think my Zoom had a slight delay, so that when I was hearing any of a question on you and went to buzz, someone had already buzzed, and I was like, well, I know that one.
But so, I think, funny enough, I actually think it's
late, mate. That's what you
need. It did actually work out correctly, because obviously Paul won Soaring Ahead, who is, out of us, the biggest actual Trekkie. At the end of the day, outed.
I think that kind of sealed it.
I was in the middle, Which, again, is right in terms of, because although I've never been a Trekkie, I'd seen, like, the films and, like, episodes of TV and stuff like that before we started this. And you are the biggest noob, Matt. So that's why you failed.
Well, weren't the scores literally, like, 25, 12, 3 or something?
Yeah, something like
exactly.
Yeah, it might be exactly that.
Exactly us.
Yeah.
Don't forget my half as well.
It's very important, very important. But, yes, so there's a big arc going across this season, and which builds up to essentially the two-part finale and the reveal of the big bad being one Nick Locarno, who, again, features in an episode of The Next Generation, Matt, which you will now have to catch up on.
Well, yeah, I was just saying off mic to you, Liam, wasn't it, that that part in that last episode when, you know, they're looking at all the other ships that are in danger, I think, and it's like, oh, who are we going to go and save and help out? Is it going to be Seven of Nine? Is it going to be Riker? Is it going to be someone, you know? And then they go, no, you get this Nick Locarno guy. I thought that was a low Dex joke about them being, maybe we'll do something with a big legacy character, but instead they just get some random nobody who they've made up for the show.
And then wasn't made up for the show.
Exactly, that's what
I've just been explaining.
Well, I was like, give us this brand new character, Nick Locarno. Great.
But of course, I mean, this is the thing. Lower Decks is a show made up of deep cut references. It is designed for the hardcore Uber fan. There's no one on the street knows who fucking Nick Locarno is.
Well, I watched it, and I didn't know
who it was.
I remember it once, it was because you just said, now I've got to watch First Duty.
Oh, right, so you join the dots.
So I was kind of just ready for it, because that was the day before I watched the episode, so I was like, that must be the episode, Wesley Crusher and the Academy. Yeah.
Yes,
It rang a bell, but I wouldn't have kind of made that connection until they started doing the backstory.
So, yeah, I actually went back and watched the episode, The First Duty, as research after watching the finale. And it did give it extra resonance to actually know who that person was and be
Paris.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. Like, so that was interesting to see.
Someone even says in that ninth episode when Nick Locarno gets brought, they go, who? It's a proper Richard Donner, who?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah.
Well,
exactly.
There's lots of jokes because obviously this character was also played by Robert Duncan McNeil, who comes back for this episode to reprise the voice of Nick Locarno, who, of course, he played in this random episode of TNG, The First Duty. And then, obviously, he went on to play Paris in Star Trek Voyager, but apparently the original plan was that they would just have Nick Locarno in Voyager, because at the end of the first year he gets expelled from Starfleet Academy, so it would make sense that he'd be the kind of character who would end up in kind of prison or wherever Paris is at the beginning of Voyager. And at a certain point they went, oh no, we should make it a new character, but let's just have Robert Duncan McNeil play him in exactly the same way anyway. So that's the whole thing. That's why they're making loads of jokes about, like, oh, he looks exactly the same as Tom Paris. I don't see it, but yeah.
Interesting, didn't know that bit of background.
Yeah.
You get asked it on that quiz.
Well, that's the thing. we had to learn TNG first, but this is the problem with a show like Lower Decks. You essentially, unless you're hard, uber hardcore Star Trek fan, you essentially have to do homework and research.
This was lucky that the first episode out the gate then is Tuvix, and we literally just
I know. Oh my god, we've literally just done an episode on Tuvix with Josh Weller and had the Tuvix debate finally, and then the first episode is essentially a spoof of that.
He's calling himself T'Illips.
This exact scenario happened to the Voyager crew. Everything is falling apart.
No need for panic. I'm sure I can deal with this transporter situation on my own. Just send me a copy of Janeway's logs. I'll do whatever she did.
Sending now. Thank you, Captain.
It was very funny. I actually kind of felt, at first, I was a bit worried that, because sometimes Lower Decks can have a little, like, slight toxic fan side to it, where it just kind of seems to be almost playing up to, like, the hardcore fan base. And when they first started making those jokes about, oh, Janeway straight up killed him, it was funny in terms of, because the captain is basically saying, oh, I'll just read Janeway's logs and see what she did in this situation. I'm sure she came up with a brilliant idea. And they're just like, oh, she just murdered him. And like, yeah, and but then later on, they balance the argument, because they go, like, oh, look, she was trapped out in the Delta Quadrant. different rules apply, but now we can do something different. So they kind of balanced out the arguments on that one, which
I liked. Funny how it did manage to reference everything we kind of brought up on our episode with Josh as well, because we got the Tuvix orchid showing up as kind of like this instigator for the thing. I was like, oh, the orchid's getting a mention, which they seem to forget. That whole line there of, you know, Janeway straight out murdered Tuvix, right? And then the whole thing how Josh had said, like, why don't they, in the Tuvix episode, why don't they go through the logs to find out what Riker did? Whereas in this one, they actually take a moment to look through the logs to see what Janeway did.
I love that. That was one of my favourite bits. Just like, because you knew it was coming. Yeah. Like, you know, so she said, I'll just go and show Janeway. It's like, no point panicking. You know?
And then the whole thing towards the end, which is kind of what I had suggested in the episode, going like, oh yeah, what if Tuvix just started combining everybody on the ship? And that started happening. And I was like, brilliant, this is a great way to escalate this concept
call it Tuvix.
Rather than being killed, just be like, I will Tuvix everybody here and just combine everyone.
It was a fun way to start, and it did seem like just fate being that we just covered Tuvix at the end of it.
Well, I liked all the other Voyager kind of references throughout as well. There was like the macro virus thing that was floating around. That was great.
Which you've also covered on this podcast.
And the, you know, the Neelix's cheese like stuff.
I know all about the Neelix cheese.
You know, it's just like things like that were really, really fun.
So you mentioned Bold Boimler, Paul. So let's talk a little bit about the kind of journey Boimler and the fellow Lower Deckers kind of go on this season. Now, we've talked about this in previous seasons of Lower Decks, where we were like, where is this show going to go? Is it going to be a case of they just remain Lower Decks forever? Or are we actually going to see them progress and kind of Lower Decks just become a kind of catch-all in terms of new characters will come on and now they'll be the Lower Decks? And we're actually seeing that essentially happening, which I actually really liked, showing that progress, because I do think Lower Decks has suffered a bit from the adult animation thing of never moving anywhere, whereas this season genuinely felt like, oh, these characters are actually progressing. And in the first episode, all of our main crew, like Boimler, Mariner, Tendi and Rufford, all get promoted to lieutenant. I mean, Rufford takes slightly longer than everyone else.
I don't want you to pressure yourself to get a promotion just so we can hang out. It can take years.
Don't worry, I've been working on something pretty impressive. Billups is gonna love it. Commander Billups, can I run something by you, sir?
Of course, Mr. Rutherford. What's up?
For the past year, I've been working to decrease vibration in the warp manifold by a factor of 0.05.
0.05? That can't be right.
Well, it wasn't easy, but with a little ingenuity...
No, I mean, it can't be right, because a few minutes ago, Ensign Livick decreased the vibration by a factor of 0.06.
Ensign Livick? Who's that?
The new guy.
yeah, that's very funny. So that's basically, Rufford gets kind of held behind, eventually just get promoted at the end of the second episode. But he has this like war with this other engineer.
Like super engineer guy.
Called Livick, which is very funny. But yeah, they all get promoted and become lieutenants, junior grade. And we actually get to see them teaching new recruits
that Scrubs goes on, which Scrubs starts out as they are brand new in the teaching year of their education, but then as that goes on, they become doctors by season 3, and then towards the end they start getting their other interns in. So it's like, keep the focus on that main,
and then by Scrubs med school
that's where it's like now it's something else. It can be like that. It's kind of what it reminded me of those guys will stay together. And they're still the focus, and they're still the lower rung, but then they're suddenly not the lowest rung.
Yes.
And I think they can carry this on in this, and you're right, I think more animated shows should do the thing where people do age and grow and things change, as tempting as it might be to keep a status quo for too long.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I can only assume that will now continue into season 5.
I think it's either you keep the status quo for the entire show no matter what, or you do some moving forward. I think doing half and half is really tricky. And so I'm glad they're putting the eggs into the moving forward basket, but at a slower pace. So it still feels like we can have these guys have Lower Decks adventures still.
Yeah, completely. And, you know, it was really fun getting to see them in that position. And Boimler still be Boimler, because in the third episode, he's actually finally doing the teaching instead. He's kind of teaching some new recruits like cadets. but he can't let them do it, and he's doing it all himself, right, for like stressing himself out. And it was nice to see that kind of like it was that nothing will ever change with that character. Like, he is still the same guy, even though he's made it to the next position. He's still finding a way to be that very kind of stressy Boimler character. That was a lot of fun. I also loved the thing with Boimler keep having to change rooms being like stuck between two holodecks and then the thing where what is it that he's, it's next like the
cell, red cell, and it just gets bigger when he increases the thing power, it just like burns his eyes.
That was very funny. His entire like room is like doused.
It's like Seinfeld with the chicken sign outside the window with Kramer like, what's going on in there?
That was really, really funny. And I think a lot of these early episodes in the season are all just really strong. I think the run of...
The Menagerie one was really funny. I liked the, you know, I love Marino just being sort of, you know, you're fucking like, can't believe you keep moving cages. Like, you know, and just sort of like really ragging on the kind of like director of the Menagerie just to try and be insubordinate. That was a really funny bit at the beginning of that episode.
Yeah, that is a fun episode. Of course, this is another thing of Mariner straight away, second episode, we're back to Mariner being incredibly insubordinate. She is doing it deliberately to play up to Ransom because she's misheard him and thinks that he's going to try and bust her back down to lower decks. At first, when I saw Mariner acting up again, I was like, oh, for fuck's sake, this fucking thing. Because Mariner has always been a slightly frustrating character to me because she does seem to go in cycles of essentially every season, pretty much of acting out, and then something happens where she has to kind of prove herself and like save the day. And that's kind of how every season goes. And in this season, when that started again, I was like, oh, I'm enjoying this season, but come on, Mariner, they've really got to progress this character a bit. If they're, you know, they're all progressing to become lieutenant, she can't remain this kind of character forever, which obviously built up throughout the season and actually legitimately paid off this season in the penultimate episode, The Inner Fight, where you essentially get Mariner locked in a sort of arena Darmok situation with a Klingon, where they're sort of like fighting to death on this planet, and you get her revealing basically exactly why she's the way she has been this entire show, where we're revealed in yet another TNG throwback, where we find out that it's to do with the tragedy of losing her best friend, who was the Lower Decks cadet who dies in Lower Decks, the episode of TNG, which inspired this entire show, obviously.
That's another one for the list.
Which is an excellent episode of TNG. It's really, really good. I mean, I remember I watched that in preparation for the actual Lower Decks series.
Quite totally different.
Yeah. Well, I remember watching it going, what a fantastic episode. Wow, Lower Decks, the series, is going to be great. Oh.
In the first episode, just cutting their arm off by mistake. Yeah.
Yeah, so to tie it back to that, I actually really liked, and obviously that episode genuinely got really serious, and suddenly Mariner was like a real character with real thoughts and feelings and everything like that, and it was actually quite moving to kind of see her brought to that point.
So when we get to season 5 and the cycle starts again, are you going to be like,
Well,
do you think it's past it?
I think it might be past it. I think it's past it.
I think it has to be. I think if we get to season 5 and Mariner is back on her bullshit, acting out again, I don't think it works or makes sense. Because I think now we've had that revelation and essentially seen her move past that, I don't think it makes sense. I think she now has to kind of move on a little bit and kind of not become a different character, but at least mature.
Do you think they came up with that backstory for her in between seasons as opposed to from the start? Because I think if they had that in mind from the start, they would have deployed it already. Because like you say, because they've done the same character cycle for each season, by now would have made sense, unless they were hoping to tie it into this overall story, which was always planned for season 4.
I think it's hard to tell in terms of, because it seems like something that they would have thought of from the start, because I think the fact that it's tied back to that Lower Decks episode. So, because
yeah, having, like day one on the whiteboard, like Lower Decks TNG, exactly. Let's have someone connected to that
person. Yeah, having a character directly connected to that episode makes so much sense that I'm almost like, yes, maybe they did, but like you say, it kind of feels like if they had done, they would have done it in season one. It feels very long game for it to be happening in season four. But, you know, whatever the case, ultimately, it did work.
Or maybe they now know they want to put this element of her character to bed, so like, let's do it by bringing this in. And then that's actually closure for her as well.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's possible.
I think she's still going to have reservations about her abilities and things because it's part of her character, but whether she'll be actively trying to sabotage stuff in the same way, it'd be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's not that she can't still be that troublemaker character occasionally, but I just kind of feel they need to push past it a bit and enter a new kind of era for her maturity-wise. And I think this is setting that up, and that makes sense. But moving back to earlier in the season, you were saying, Paul, one of the good things about this season was the addition of Gabrielle Ruiz as Talin, who obviously has appeared in the show before. She was actually part of possibly my favourite Lower Decks episode ever, which was the episode that showed the Lower Decks on other ships, like with Vulcan and Klingons and stuff like that. And I loved that episode, and she was a big part of it because she was really, really funny. And she did appear in the finale of the last season, but this season, she only actually appears in 6 episodes, but she feels like a new regular. She feels like now that quartet has expanded out to a quintet, and she's now part of the team of the Lower Decks kind of crew. And I really thought she was an excellent addition. I think she's a very funny character, but also you really, really like her from the start. Like, I warmed to her much faster than I ever did any of the other characters. And I think in the 5th episode, with the one with the Betazoids, she has a big kind of moment in that where she's kind of having this crisis of confidence that's affecting the rest of the crew. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, really nice moment. And yeah, I just thought she was a great addition. She really kind of helped elevate things for me.
Yeah, it was a good episode, that one. And I think there was a good subplot in that one, Boiler being overworked and wanted to train with the security team, and they're all just like mucking around. They're like super...
They're doing like charades and stuff.
I thought it was just fun, like that whole episode. And just the debate is always like being like potentially like a, it was like a Pendu.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
The horny drunk ladies with telepathic powers.
Yeah.
Who turn out to be badass, yeah. And
That episode was another kind of virus wreaks havoc on the crew setup, which we see so much in Star Trek anyway.
Yeah.
But done really, really funny, and by just turning everybody into sort of party monsters was great.
Yeah, I just feel they've really improved the groove of the show by, and they started to do this in season 2, but I feel like by this season they've really got there, where there is now a lot of comedy coming out of things that don't really have anything directly to do with like Star Trek Easter eggs.
Yes.
Kind of thing. Like, like one of the funniest things, and I know obviously it's a sort of reference to Star Trek, but you don't need to know anything about Star Trek to make it work, is in the...
The Mark Twain thing.
Yes. Yeah.
I like that.
The 4th episode, Something Borrowed, Something Green, where Rutherford and Boimler are roommates, and they're loving at first, but they soon turn against each other. And then they end up becoming friends again by playing like dueling Mark Twain's in the holodeck. And then they decide this must be the best way to kind of like kill rifts. So they try and get the captain to negotiate as Mark Twain with an alien. And that is very funny. Like, that whole sequence is really
funny. And then the captain's like, you thought this would fucking work?
Yeah. And just them being around being like, I do declare.
Like, you need to work your southern accent. And it's like, this is my son. I'm on the south side of my planet.
Yeah, no. I thought that was really genuinely funny.
That tickled me, definitely.
That was the same thing in the episode with them going to Orion and finding out Tendi is basically sort of rich royalty on the planet, which was great.
Well, probably the most important character arc of the season is Tendi's, really.
I don't think it's as important as Mariner's.
Well, yeah, I suppose I'm thinking, no, I agree.
It's good to know about Tendi, and I think it's good to have have something at last, because I think, you know, usually when it was like a Rutherford Tendi like subplot, it was in the previous series quite dull. Like,
yes.
They were just like, they were kind of ironic. Can we just get back to like what Boimler and, you know, back Mariner?
Yeah, that's very true, actually.
And I think this season, they've come in their own way. You've got this fantastic episode of the Ferengi planet where they have to pretend to be a married couple.
Yes.
And some amazing comedy between the two of them. And then, you know, just with Tendi sort of like having this kind of other side to her, that sort of, you know, it's just putting something on, isn't it? So she, you know, she's herself, but she's in Starfleet, but she has to put on this kind of like ferocious kick-ass person but she also follows through on it on the Ryan homeworld.
She's like letting them in, and says, "Oh, thousand apologies, miss."
Well, she's basically like a Ryan royalty, isn't she? Essentially, I suppose the reason why I was saying it's most important is the one we leave off on in terms of the cliffhanger where she returns to Orion. But you're right, that episode where it's the sixth episode where they go to Ferengar and they're having a dinner. They somehow like breaking Ferengi law by like pretending to be a couple to get a discount.
Yeah, and what was it like, you know, 80 years of hard labor for it?
Because they value like money above all else, which also, funny enough, actually comes back in the finale in a very funny way where Lacano's trying to defuse the Genesis device, but there's like a Ferengi paywall on it.
Put a paywall on a bomb? Stupid Ferengi.
That's all very. And obviously, we get Rom back in that episode.
I thought it was why I loved it. I was just like, you know, it's not that long since I finished DS9. It's just nice to have a kind of semi sequel.
Yeah.
Because that's what I think is nice where this is placed in the canon. It's after TNG, Voyager, and DS9. So it's like filling in a little bit of those blank years.
Oh, did you go back and watch the DS9 episode from season 3?
No.
Because don't you remember you refused to watch it because of spoilers?
Yeah, no, I never watched that one.
Oh, wow. Well, you should definitely go back to that now. Like, because, they actually go, obviously, they actually go back to DS9.
Yes.
And Quark's in it and Kira and everything like that. So,
There's definitely a reason to do that now. I should do that. But yeah, this is my version of that then.
Yes.
With just seeing Ferengi again, because it gets such a big run out in DS9. There's lots of Ferenginar set stuff. But this is... this kind of like, you know, obviously the scale you can do on animation, like far trumps what you can see, you know, over a couple of sets on a DS9. So it's really cool to see the Ferengi kind of society laid out. And I just thought it was really funny just navigating. And then obviously the TV shows that Boimler gets hooked on.
Oh my God.
It's so great because it's like they're kind of selling stuff within the show as well.
Yeah, they've actually got, it's not even just like plugging or anything or like product placement, is it? They are literally stopping in the middle of the show, in the middle, like it's sewn into the narrative to be like, well, do an advert within the show.
Tom Stock sent me a clip of like South American thing of Star Wars.
Yeah, did you see this?
No.
It was doing arounds on Twitter where there was, I think it's Chile or somewhere.
Right.
They wanted to, when Star Wars was airing on TV in like the 80s or whatever, they wanted to obviously have ads, but they didn't want to stop the flow of the film, so they sort of built the ads into the movie.
Yeah,
so there's the bit where like, Obi-Wan,
I want you to have this window old enough. He opens up the thing. It's actually a beer. And he has
a cooler of ice. He's like, duh, duh, duh. It comes in with a theme tune and goes back to the film.
What, with actual Alec Guinness?
No, but it's very seamlessly done. It's like, he opens the chest to get the lightsaber out. And it's obviously like a different shot. And it's like full of ice and beer. And he's like, duh, duh, duh.
Oh my God, I've got to see this.
And then later on, when Alec Guinness is at the tractor beam thing, he goes to pull the thing, but it opens up a slot and a beer drops out.
I've got to check this out. But it was very funny. What was the whole thing where there was like a death scene for Ferengi and they were like, when he was dying and somehow like dying was still selling.
No, he was getting like fleeced. It's like, oh, I'm so glad it was you that was fleecing me.
The cop landlord show.
It was very, very funny.
And the whole like when Tenny and Rutherford are made to like consummate the relationship, and it's like, oh no, what, in front of you? Also, no, in this thing we can't see you, but we will hear it.
You will hear the entire thing.
Divana, Samanthan, what a coincidence. These are famously the two closest platonic friends on my ship.
Platonic? Security!
Yeah, of course, this builds up to the big cliffhanger for the season, which is that Tendi is forced back to Orion because she does a deal with her sister because they need to get hold of this battleship, essentially. And she says, well, yeah.
I slept through this bit, so I was like, why is Tendi going back to
So what it is the battleship that Boimler uses the tractor beam to
Yeah, I saw
crash.
That. I got it. I get it, but like, why? It's a thing. Why can't they just take it or whatever?
Well, this is an Enterprise with Archer be like forcibly taking stuff from people. This is still the optimistic Lower Decks, like TNG era. And so they do an honorable deal and she sticks to it. Because that's the way things work here. And yeah, Tendi is good. And obviously, you know, a bit like the captain getting arrested at the end of season two, this is a slightly tacked on, not as tacked on as that was, because at least we've built up the whole Tendi and Ryan thing through the season. But it is a slightly, this will blatantly be resolved in the season five premiere. This is not going to like run and run.
No,
in the season 5 premiere, it will be like, oh, I'm coming back, actually. Like, oh, yeah.
I've done my time.
Yeah, so it will get sorted out. But one thing that I do want to mention, just because it comes up at the very end, is I've got to say, and obviously we will have given credit to Chris Westlake before, I presume, as the composer.
The best theme tune of New Trek, yeah.
His music, specifically in the finale, I thought.
Well, it's because it's doing a Horner, isn't he? Like with the Nebula. Yes. So
yeah, but it's not, he's not actually lifted Horner themes. It's just Horner influenced.
There was like a couple of like little bits which are absolutely trying to be bang on the money. But then in Spurs, it was like very good.
Yes. Very good Horner impression.
The Horner cue, but like then just building out in the vein of that, in that style.
Yeah.
And in its own way, which I liked. Yeah.
It gave the finale real scale to
me. Yeah, and it's the first time they've done a Wrath of Khan thing where it was like, that's different enough to like not be like, I just wish I was watching Wrath of Khan.
Yes.
They've done so many Wrath of Khan like wannabes over the years, and it's just been like, fucking hell. But this one actually like, was really entertaining throughout.
Yeah, because it's utilising the Genesis device.
It's utilising your knowledge of Wrath of Khan to kind of like subvert your expectations.
But it does that thing that I think we've said before, where I think New Trek are really nailing these finales, because I think we've said every finale of Lower Decks has been suddenly this very condensed movie-like version of story, as we've seen Strange New Worlds do as well. I think between the two shows, each one of their finales is something like up to like, oh, this is like a movie story done in the TV length, and it's been great. It's like you feel that jump up. Mm-hmm. It's like, yes, they're always saving one of these in the chamber for like the last bit.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think this was the best finale of Lower Decks. I agree that the finales have been reasonably strong episodes. I mean, I remember that the season one finale was literally the only episode from season one that I genuinely liked quite a bit. Mm. But even then, that had Badgie in it. So, like, literally, it was brought down by that, but it was very intense. And the season two and three ones, I remember being, like, decent as well. But this one, I really thought was a cut above and had that kind of, felt like I had that epic scope. And there were parts of it, like, and I do agree with Sam Clements, who came on our Strange New Worlds season two episode, that I thought the animation has improved as well. I thought the animation was a lot more cinematic in this, while it's still very much the same style, but I felt like it was far more expansive and cinematic in terms of the way they were kind of compositioning a lot of the shots and kind of what they were achieving. And in that finale, there's big moments, big kind of space battle stuff, which is actually really well directed for like an animation of this kind of class. Because Star Trek Prodigy has done some really, really excellent stuff, especially the big two-part finale of season one. It's just really, really impressive stuff. And that really, animation-wise, kind of outstripped Lower Decks for me. But this finale really kind of matched up.
Yeah, totally. Was Badgie as far back as season one?
Badgie first appeared in, I think, season one, episode 5. I think it harmed my brain that much, I remember it. Yeah, it's that he appears like twice in like season one, he's like in an episode halfway through, which is the one where he actually goes mad, and then he kind of comes back as the bad guy in the finale.
Well, let's talk about the badgie episode here.
We share special highlights because for the badgie episode.
Knowing the way he was teased in the trailers and you know, at the end of season three and stuff, did you think that the culprit behind the mysterious ship blowing people up was going to be badgie?
I thought that he would play a much bigger part in this season than he did.
Mm.
Because like you say, when we were watching season three, he gets this big post-credits, which is an even weirder, that post-credits at the end of season three is literally just the opening bit of that episode. Like, you know, where he gets pulled out. It's exactly the same bit.
Yeah.
And so the way that was played, the way that was teased, it very much seemed to be Badgie will be like the big bad.
It was a misdirect.
Of season four. Well, I'm interested. I'm genuinely like, was it a complete misdirect? Or was that a plan? And then at a certain point they realised, no, well, that's
read your comments on Badgie.
Yeah, exactly. They heard all our episodes back to back.
This was dreadful, this episode. And I'm with you on this, Liam. Like, as soon as they did that, but then threw in Peanut Happer as well, it was just...
Yeah, just... Oh,
I really like this one.
My God. I mean, I will say, I don't think this episode is as bad as the episode with Peanut Humper on the bird plane, which I absolutely vehemently hated. I didn't like it. It's the only episode of the season I genuinely disliked, but I was like, it wasn't as bad as I thought it might be.
I suppose we're just going to have to get used to loads of rogue artificial intelligence like stories from now on.
Yeah,
like,
see, this is it. This is why I quite liked it, because I thought it contained Badgie to this one episode and did something really cool then, which was to take that kind of becoming oppressively sentient AI kind of, you know, trope of a villain, but give it to Badgie and let him do his thing with it. It was really fun. And then him having these moments of like conscious and emotions, and then rather than kind of cave in, just split that part off, so you get the Gucci turning up.
I was like, yes,
this is great, because we're going to just have these little moment extra characters from.
That means you have like four or five different birthday cards you can have now.
Yeah, Gucci go.
I really liked it,
and like when he was attacking in Rutherford, you get that I can't let Badgie boot my friends to death, and he's just like boop 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 boop, and he's, you know, you get a real sense of his power. It felt like season-ending villain power growth. But then having him just become, like, so sentient, it's like a Hitchhiker's Guide kind of gag.
I have unlimited power and infinite knowledge. I exist in the past, present, and future. I can see the creation of time and its end. Organic, synthetic, all life are strands in the fabric of reality. It's beautiful. Ooh, sorry about all the drama. Well, I'm gonna go to an empty dimension and create a universe now. Maybe hang out with the Q Continuum or check out the Black Mountain.
Yeah, there's that shot where he's like slowly like emerging out of the galaxy, which is a fucking great shot as he's like just before he realizes what's going on. And I liked it a fair bit.
I think my eyes were just so full of rage that they'd stopped seeing by that
point. I think I fell asleep at the end. I
got another quick Badgie anecdote for you, I was in CEX recently getting some movies, and the guy at the counter in CEX, he had a hat on that was full of like enamel pins and badges. It was like, you know, clanking around. It's all full of metal. All these little pins and badges. One of them, massive Badgie. And I was like,
not just a Starfleet badge, actual Badgie.
Actual Badgie.
Oh my god.
Yay big, right in the middle there. I was just like,
Jesus. Well, that guy must be a psychopath. Like, I think it should probably be reported to the police, in all honesty. But yeah, the one thing, the Gucci thing I roll my eyes at, but... the one thing I found slightly amusing in this episode was the logic key thing. I thought that was kind of funny. Like, I think, like, you know,
I think any character who's blunting all these kind of gags in this show with logic,
is amusing. But I, like I say, I do think it's the weakest episode.
Did you like logic key getting baned and having a spine slapped?
Well, I mean, that was just more the thing. And also, this is a genuine issue I have. The Badgie stuff, I really don't like how insanely violent it gets when Badgie comes along. Look, I just don't
still
think,
you talking, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I know. And I literally, it's like I have no issue with violence at the end of the day. Like, you know, it is
that we'll always pitch the darkest possible ending for something ever.
But I just don't. It's a tonal thing. I just don't think tonally it fits this show at all. When suddenly, out of nowhere, whenever Badgie turns up, it suddenly gets like insanely violent. Obviously, it's like it's clearly meant to be like a joke. Like, I think because he's such a stupid comedy character.
Well, every time it crash zoomed into his face and it got extra detailed and extra like sinister, it's just hilarious.
I think that's why it's meant to be funny that he's like insanely violent, but I just don't find it funny. Like, it's Badgie will never win me out. And I hope
humor ship this not
is
found.
This is mate, I've gone full logic here. I hope that this is the end of Badgie and Peanut Hamper, because they kind of seem to wrap them up a bit, because Badgie's gone.
He's ascended.
And Peanut Humper. Oh no, it's back to the bird shagging episode. Look, Peanut Hamper seems to be like reforming at the end, like a thing along with like the evil computers and stuff like that. Oh, that was the other thing that was funny in this episode. The whole thing about the evil computer having a blue light. So they were like, oh, he must be good.
The group therapy. And like the prison yard, where just like the viewers just left in the yard, like the balling for between
them. Yeah, it felt very like Futurama, those gags. Like a sort of robot penal collar. You know.
Caves, episode 8 caves. I like this one because they reference the fact that, you know, the cave set in Star Trek, just basically relit from a different angle, like, you know, 50 times.
Yeah. Is this pure Devil of the Dark?
Yes.
The episode most frequently given answer in the Trek's quiz.
Yeah, I really like this episode because it really it focused down on the core four. It made light on the joke.
Core four.
Made light on the joke of so much old Trek is set in caves. In the same sort of way you can make jokes of Doctor Who and Red Dwarf being in just warehouses and
quarries.
Stuff. Quarries, yeah.
Yeah.
And then being able to do essentially an anthology show about cave stories with each of them having another cave adventure to reference and stuff. Yeah, I thought it was great.
It was a really clever conceit. And I think, you know, the individual flashbacks, like, are, you know, each of them is quite strong.
Yeah.
Although the whole man being pregnant thing, it has been done way too many times in sci-fi now as a gag. It's just been done to death. And I was just like, and also it's another classic thing of Lower Decks. This happened last season where there was an episode. It's always Rutherford. There was an episode with Rutherford, which had been done on Red Dwarf much better. And this was another one where obviously Lister gets pregnant in Red Dwarf, like in one of the earliest seasons in the 80s. So they definitely, I don't remember it seeing it done before then. And I'm just like, yeah, you're not going
to do that. Him? How can he get pregnant?
Well, if they didn't use precautions, he could be up the spout.
But it's women who get pregnant.
Since when?
Since always. My mother was a woman.
Oh, listy. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
If I'm understanding correctly, it appears that in their universe, it's the men who give birth to the babies. And as we are in their universe, you could very well possibly be up the duff, laddie.
Come on, I'm not buying this. This is a wind-up.
Don't get emotional, not in your condition.
But it was fine. I thought it was one of those things where it's like, it's a one-note joke episode in terms of like, oh yeah, it's a caves thing and it's funny, we've got these little short stories. The thing with Boimler and the conspiracy theorist guy was quite funny. For a minute, I thought that he was going to get proven right, the conspiracy theorist guy. And I was like, that'd be a really bad message, guys, for this time. And luckily he didn't. It was kind of like, you know, the joke. Was that character, the conspiracy theorist guy, Paul, was that a character we were meant to know?
Is it an existing new person?
Because I almost thought, is that like, it would be funny. I mean, obviously it's a different era, but if it had been like the Bigotry on the Bridge guy or something, it would be really funny.
There was not a and I, you know, you mentioned earlier about, like, you know, how in the next episode, the inner fight, you know, references the person that she lost friend-wise was...
Yes.
I didn't know that was the actual Lower Decks episode.
Oh, okay.
So that's, like, that was news to me when you said that. So, yeah, that's a pretty deep cut.
Yeah, it's another deep cut. But it's, you know, both that Sito Jaxa and Nick Lacan both tie back heavily to TNG, which does make sense because, you know, TNG, I think, is the show that this links back to the most. It, weirdly, in spirit and co-opted, it's very much within that TNG feel.
But I love they are moving around, like the other two shows as well from that era.
Yes, yeah, Voyager and DS9, yeah, definitely. It would be interesting to see, because I think there was an Archer reference this season. It would be interesting to see if they do float in that pool a little bit more, because it almost feels like slightly untapped, especially for comedic purposes, because it's just kind of like, you know, it feels like there's a lot of stuff they could pull out of Enterprise, because that feels like the one show.
It's the black sheep of the family.
It's not getting the love, is it, in the New Track era? And no, I feel like if anywhere it's going to get the love in terms of a kind of sly ribbing love is in Lower Decks.
I think this is where it's going to happen, yeah, definitely.
They could do a time trial episode just within Lower Decks where they go back to Enterprise. Because it would kind of make sense, especially Boimler being the absolute like Starfleet nerd that he is, that he would want to go back to the original Enterprise. Like, you know, that somehow that happened or something like that. Or even like there'd be something like there's a virtual museum or something like that of the original Enterprise, and like they go back and you get the characters back that way. That'd be quite funny. Have Archer as a virtual tour guide or something like that.
Or just in the way that Disney Plus have done X-Men 97 and just made like a new series.
Yes, what animated.
Yeah,
just, I mean, it would have to be. Yeah,
carrying
Christ.
On the adventures.
Enterprise 03. Maybe not.
One moment that did get me going Captain America style, I understood that reference, was in that ninth episode when when Mariner's like, oh, this thing's a puppet, and it's that really shoddy looking alien from one of the original series episodes.
Yeah, so it's from the Corbinite Maneuver.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Because that thing pops up on the screen and it's a puppet. And so she's like, this thing's a puppet.
It
like,
turns out to be Ron Howard's brother.
Yes. Yeah. That was... That made me laugh.
That was a great joke of being like, no, this thing does exist, and it just looks this weird. Just
But I like it was a captain making that mistake, like, as well. It was really good.
Well, also, that almost felt almost a bit Simpsons-y. That moment reminded me a little bit of Krusty Gets Cancelled, the puppet that Krusty tries to get to compete with Gabbo.
It's not alive!
Then he like throws it into the audience and kids, and they're all screaming.
So, you want ventriloquism, do you? Alright, watch this. Hello, Alphonse. I've got a riddle for you. Why is a raven like a writing desk? I don't know. Why is a... Hey, that dummy can't hurt you. He's not even alive. He's dead.
I love how whenever we talk about Lower Decks, I mean, like I said, I liked this season.
Yeah.
But whenever we talk about Lower Decks, we always said don't talk about superior adult animated comedy.
Well, it was a strong series overall. I'm like looking back over it. I think one of the things I'm most excited for season 5 is seeing them do the poster of Final Frontier.
Yes.
Like, rip.
Yes, so I agree.
Go there.
I agree. They've done every other season.
The love that has around the table. We good to see.
The sixth poster is the last one of those really epic multiple character kind of posters. I know Generations is still like an art poster, but it's not quite the same. I feel like they've got to get 6 seasons just to continue the poster thing, to do the Final Frontier and Undiscovered Country posters in Lower Deck style. It'd be amazing.
But I think 5 is maybe the last one.
I think it will be the final season, but I'm like, come on, just one last ride. Or perhaps if Section 31 goes really well, perhaps there'll be like, TV movie finale, and they can do the Undisco Country for that. So what are we thinking in season 5? Well, the only thing that's annoying now is because they've actually hinted at bringing Cybok properly back for Strange New Worlds, because obviously it was a big teaser. I was surprised he didn't come back in season 2, because I'm like, you can't give us that in season 1, then not, you know, capitalise on that.
Yeah.
But it means that they can't do him in a Lower Decks episode, because that kind of feels like custom made for Lower Decks.
Yeah.
Like,
well, maybe it's just the god creature back again. You know?
Yes, you could do the god creature. That would be quite fun.
Or do it with proper rock men this time, you know. Like, yes. Realise Shatner's vision.
Matt, have you got some final thoughts on Lower Decks Season 4?
I continue to have a lot of fun with the show. I think as it goes on, I'm reacting more and more to the characters, to the cast. And I think there's some really great standalone stuff here. I really liked Tuvix. I really liked, the fifth one with the Betazoids. I like the Badgie one. I really like the Caves episode and the two-part finale. I mean, the entire back half's really strong. Yeah, I never thought I'd be sad to see this one go if it does. But I would, so... It's got a 2024 release, hasn't it? Season 5, so it'll be out probably...
Yeah, it'll be out soon, yeah.
Summertime, yeah.
Yeah, well, I should say, as usual, we're slightly late to the party in this one. This was broadcast on Paramount Plus between the 7th September 2023 and the 2nd November 2023. So we are catching up, but it's still a couple of months ago now. Like you, Matt, I never thought I'd be saying it, but I actually am now hoping that Lower Decks gets to go on a couple more seasons as well, because I think it would be a shame for me to finally find its feet properly in season 4 and then die at season 5. Like, I actually would like it to continue a bit longer, because I actually genuinely thought this was a very good season of Trek. Like, it was really nice going off the back of Strange New Worlds season 2, which yep. I loved, and being like, not a massive come down, being like, oh, this is another very good season.
And this was all positioned as being post that Strange New Worlds episode, wasn't it? Because they mentioned it in the first episode. In Tuvix.
How can you be this distracted over an empty ship?
Chakotay served here.
Dude, this is nothing compared to, that Pike thing we aren't supposed to talk about. Let's get these chunky cold sores under control so we can get back to enjoying them.
They're self-replicating again! Mr. Boimler, get out here! This is your fault!
Like I say, for a few badges more, not so great. But apart from that, like, genuinely enjoyed all the episodes, and particularly really liked I Have No Bones Yet, I Must Flee, In the Cradle of Vexilon, Something Borrowed, Something Green, and then the two-part finale of The Inner Fight and Old Friends, New Places. So there's a lot of very good episodes in there, and I enjoyed all of them. So, yeah, I suddenly am Lower Decks Stan. There you go. I hope season 5 continues that. But, yeah, so we are gradually catching up on all new Trek. Just before, of course, Variety released a gigantic article on the future of Star Trek and revealed there is still lots more to come. We thought, for a while, we thought, oh, okay, like, things are calming down. We'll be able to kind of, slap a bit. But it's like, oh no, there's way more coming. Starfleet Academy is fully in motion. We've got the Section 31 movie coming. They say, apparently...
TV movie.
The TV movie, yeah, streaming movie. The fourth Kelvinverse film is apparently still happening. They've just launched another screenwriter on that.
It's funny how they go through how many iterations that's had so far.
Yeah.
From the whole, Hemsworth being back one dropped, Tarantino dropped, Matt Shatman one dropped.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be, a really good chapter on this, development hell, book, on that.
Yeah. There are now two Star Trek films actively in development, which is one of the things, because, this article is a very, very good piece in Variety, well worth reading if you're a Star Trek fan. But there was, obviously, a lot of it was sort of more updates on things we already knew. But there was stuff, or certainly clarifications of things that I was just like, oh, I didn't quite realise that. Like, with this, so they're saying, Kelvinverse film, still on the go. This probably must be the 120th screenwriter they've assigned, but is now the showrunner of The Flight Attendant, which is quite a successful TV show. He is writing the new screenplay, so we'll see how that goes. But further along than that, it may seem, is another Star Trek film, which is basically being positioned as Star Trek Origins, basically the origins of Starfleet. So essentially Enterprise, but even further back, which I actually kind of like the idea of, because one of the things I always said about Enterprise when we originally covered it was this is a great idea, which they didn't really capitalize on within the show. Enterprise is meant to be the first starship, basically, and yet when you watch Enterprise, it's just like any other Star Trek show. There's never really a feeling of this is the first steps out into alien territory, it really does just feel like there are so many episodes that you could just slot into TNG, into Voyager. And I was like, oh, it would be actually really cool to do the scrappy, gritty version of Enterprise as a movie.
It's interesting how they said, obviously, now the gap, you know, the time gap between Star Trek Beyond and now is bigger than the gap between Nemesis and Star Trek 09.
That was crazy. So
this is now the longest gap there's been without a new film in cinema. So it's going to be at least
since
another year plus.
Which is crazy, isn't it? When they say that, I was like, what are you sure?
What year did Beyond come out?
Beyond came out 2016, the year we launched this podcast. Yeah. And obviously,
that's
Nemesis.
8 years ago.
So wait, by the time it actually hits cinemas, it'll be actually this crew from the end of the original show to motion picture.
It'll be like 10 years,
basically.
Yeah, well, even longer, because the first Kelvinverse film was 2009.
No, since the last one.
Oh, since the last one. Right.
If they shot Beyond in 2015, say, if they're shooting this new one in 2025...
That's a big if the way things are going. Uh-huh. So I mean, so really, the earliest we're going to see that final Kelvin is 2026. At that point, it would be 17 years of Kelvinverse.
Yeah.
But does that encompass more time than the original series, animated series, and movies?
What, from the beginning of
66?
No, not quite. Well, it depends how long they end up doing. I mean, because this feels like how Daniel Craig ended up being like the actual longest running James Bond.
Like,
it does, like,
25 years.
Yeah. It's not possible. By then, at that point, they were just gone, we're just not doing it. Oh, like, yeah. But the fact that they're still going, no, we are still doing that. And it's one last ride.
Yeah, I quite like the idea of it taking so long that we get another new Star Trek film with a bunch of old people on the Enterprise.
I kind of do,
too.
But
it's now a crew that we saw when they were meant to be young.
Well, the thing is, everyone's aging so much slower now. I mean, Chris Pine still looks absolutely amazing. It's not like he looks old or anything. Like, you know, all of those actors are going to age far slower. So I actually quite like the idea of, because at this point, by the time they do a new movie, they'll be well way beyond the 5-year mission. I'm like, will it be like
Exactly.
By the time they do the fourth, it will basically be like motion picture time.
Yeah, let's have those uniforms back.
I think literally fourth Kelvinverse film needs to be their take on motion picture in terms of as in Kirk coming back and being like he's now an admiral and becomes captain again, everything like that. I think that would be awesome. Like,
on the subject of part fours, and to redeem myself from the Trexperts quiz, this past Monday I did my normal film quiz that I do, the Big About film quiz, and the soundtracks round that they do where they play 10 tracks from 10 films that all have a common theme each month. This month's theme was part fours, and we did really well. I got a track from Scream 4, there was a bunch of others in there, and then one of the ones they played was the "And I Say Screw You," and I was like, well, that's Star Trek 4. Voyage home, baby.
Yeah.
So you jumped straight in. They're like, good, you got the Star Trek one.
Incredible.
Every time they played it, I just flipped off Steve, who was sat opposite of podcast artwork, Steve Trumbull, is just like, "Oh, it's good."
incredible. Right, well, we will be back with another episode. I think, are we fully caught up
with
the new track? With What's Out? Until next week, as Star Trek Discovery Season 5 drops. So, yeah, we are actually fully caught up. Within 1 week, we will not be caught up. So let's enjoy it while we can. So you can find us at Spotlight Pod. On X, on Instagram, on Facebook, and all your podcast places. Until next time.